Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I'm learning, and what the nation is learning is that athletes don't care whether or not you're gay or straight. They just care if you can play.
Former NFL player Wade Davis talks about the struggle of being gay in professional sports. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 25th, 2013. I am Ryan Bouzion. A shooting today at a naval base in Tennessee wounded two soldiers. Police say a National Guard member opened fire at naval support activity in the city of Millington. The Navy says the gunman was taken into custody, and neither wounded soldier suffered life-threatening injuries. The latest in the ongoing controversy over the Affordable Care Act, the federal insurance marketplace has been plagued by a number of technical difficulties since its launch on October 1st. A congressional hearing is currently underway. Republicans have been against the Affordable Care Act since its beginnings. While politicians debate the usability of the site, the technology of the system composes a whole new set of issues. Reporter Jacob Ellenhorn spoke with a computer science researcher to investigate.
Healthcare.gov launched only 2 weeks ago. It was immediately faced with glitches and blackouts. To find out why, we spoke to USC computer science researcher John Heidman. Heidman says it was hard to anticipate how many people would try and access the site when it went live.
You turn stuff on, and everything goes live on October 1st, and everybody's excited and tries to access it. It's very easy to have problems with load, with having lots of people using the system at the same time. And those you try to anticipate, but it's often hard to predict what the performance is going to be.
47 million uninsured Americans looking for health care probably are not moved by that explanation. Heidman notes that healthcare.gov is a middleman between insurance companies and people looking for insurance. It's hard to place blame when there are so many parties involved.
With a system like healthcare.gov, you have a particular problem because you're really a middleman. You're sitting in between citizens trying to get healthcare and hundreds of insurance companies. And it's always difficult to be in the middle of this kind of thing because you have to not only look good to the people, to the citizens you're talking to, but you also have to interact with hundreds of different back-end insurance providers.
Because of the techno errors, Democratic members of Congress suggest delaying fines for not signing up. Jacob Ellenhorn, Annenberg Radio News.
Low-income Californians are expected to be some of the chief beneficiaries of the Affordable Care Act. We sent Logan Healy to one South LA free health clinic where he found a mixture of eagerness and confusion.
Marissa Gallegos is one of the full-time benefits counselors at St. John's Well Child and Family Center in South L.A. The clinic's mission is to deliver comprehensive health care in one of the poorest communities in the nation. Gallegos helps people choose their health insurance plans. Gallegos and other counselors at St. John's aren't certified to enroll anyone in the Affordable Care Act exchanges, but they will be soon.
I mean, it's new for everybody, so it's pretty confusing. I've gotten a calculator just to play with it and everything, but I mean, not until I have my first patient, I'll be able to really experience, you know, whether it's easy or not.
For now, St. John's is focusing on enrolling low-income individuals in Medi-Cal, California's Medicaid program.
Perfect. Medi-Cal, this is, I got this down. Yeah.
St. John's serves 3,000 people each week. It's received millions of dollars from the federal government. Jim Mangia, the president and CEO of St. John's Clinics, said the federal grants have nearly tripled St. John's size and impact.
We have already engaged in the Medicaid expansion and enrolling tens of thousands of people into Medicaid.
Mangia said the $11 billion the federal government pledged to expand health clinics and build new ones in low-income areas has been extremely significant but underreported. The federal funds are projected to virtually double the capacity of health centers to 40 million patients nationally by 2019. One way St. John's is informing people about Obamacare is through their mobile clinics. They offer medical services and insurance counseling in different parts of the community 6 days a week. The mobile clinics serve between 15 to 20 people each day. Jesse Medell, the coordinator for one of those mobile clinics, informs people about the Affordable Care Act. And even he's a little confused about the new health exchanges.
Myself, I still, you know, need to go over it a couple of times, but that's what our benefits counselors here are for.
Beginning January 1st, millions of low and middle income Californians will be able to sign up for Medi-Cal for the first time because of the Obamacare expansion. Unlike California, half the states in the U.S. are not participating in the Medicaid expansion. That leaves millions in those states not eligible for plans on the new exchanges, but not poor enough to qualify for Medicaid. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
The diverse community of Boyle Heights in East Los Angeles has a complicated history. Once defined by changing demographics, gang violence, and a struggling school system, the neighborhood came together today at Mendez High School to celebrate a breakthrough in education. La Murray has the story.
3 years ago, the community of Boyle Heights received a federal grant to improve education in an area where two-thirds of adult residents don't have a high school diploma. In the past year, the graduation rate has increased a district-high 27% at Felicitas and Gonzalo Mendez Learning Center.
We are here to celebrate and acknowledge our collaborative, which is about a promise to the youth and children of this community, of Boyle Heights, that if they grow up here, they will have access to all the opportunities available so that they can go on to college and have success.
Promesa Boyle Heights is a collaborative initiative of schools, families, and organizations focused on identifying ways to improve attendance, performance, and wellness in the community. Project Director Daisy Hernandez believes the progress in Mendez can be shared beyond the neighborhood.
By showing the successes and by showing that it works, it will be momentum for other schools, for LAUSD, for the state, to pick up on the story and the model and replicate it.
The Mendez Learning Center opened in 2009 to alleviate the crowding at Roosevelt High School, a school with more than 5,000 students. Mendez, the first school built in Boyle Heights in over 80 years, only has about 700 students. As Principal Mauro Batista explains, Mendez is in a fairly idealistic situation, and the challenge of sustaining future collaborative success exists.
I think all of us involved in the work understand that there'll be a point in time in which we won't be here. So I think a large part of our work is also to develop structures that will help this work continue even after we're gone.
Members of PROMESA have mentioned that the collaborative nature of the initiative has led to a transformational impact rather than a transitional phase. With that in mind, PROMESA invited the community to attend a college and career fair at Mendez Saturday morning at 9. Law Murray, Annenberg Radio News.
Relatively few athletes have admitted publicly that they are gay. Ex-NFL player Wade Davis feared being openly gay during his time as a player. He was a guest speaker at a conference today at the University of Southern California on sports and the LGBT experience. As Victor Figueroa reports, Davis didn't come out until years after his playing days were over.
Davis was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Tennessee Titans in 2000. During his short stint as an NFL player, Davis found that the worst times were when he was alone.
I would say most of the time that I was with my teammates was probably the safest place for me to be. It was a time where I dealt with so much self-hatred that that being on the football field, interacting with my teammates was the safest place for me. The saddest place was when I was alone, you know, when I really had to really face the actual thoughts that I was having and really sit with the fact that I was a gay man.
Davis doubted his own abilities, believing the negative stories about gay athletes.
I believed all of the stories about what people said about what it meant to be gay, you know, that we were less than, that gay men don't play sports, that we're too weak. And it took me until I retired, until, you know, I started doing work with LGBTQ youth to really start to fully love the fullness of Wade.
Davis feared that coming out would affect the brand of his teammates. But he learned that being gay doesn't matter to them.
I think I was pretty wrong. You know, I think I made a gross assumption about athletes. And I think that what I'm learning and what the nation is learning is that athletes don't care whether or not you're gay or straight. They just care if you can play.
Davis's views began to change after working for Hendrick Martin, an organization that supports LGBT youth. That's where he learned how to have real personal strength. While Davis believes things are getting better for LGBT youth, he's concerned that people are focusing too much on the rights of gay men.
I think one of the big things that I'm really concerned about right now is that we're not doing enough to educate people around issues that the transgender community faces. I think the LGBT movement is really a G movement. You know, it's barely an L and not a B and definitely not a T movement. So I think that the media needs to pay a lot more attention with every other letter and to make sure that we're informed and aware of the plights of everyone else besides gay men.
Davis was recently named the director of the You Can Play Project, an organization that works to end homophobia. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
Hey folks, you should get outside. The weather is great. Tonight, we will be having clear skies with temperatures in the high 50s, and on Saturday and Sunday, the mornings will start out cloudy and then clear up later in the day with temperatures climbing into the low 80s in some inland areas. At the beach, temperatures will hover around the mid-70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we get a behind-the-scenes look at NPR's StoryCorps. Today is National Food Day, although I thought every day was National Food Day. But a nationwide celebration of healthy and sustainable food in the Los Angeles Unified School District is celebrating healthy food, too. Catherine Davis headed downtown to see what the district is doing.
They say kids won't eat their vegetables, but that's not what 11th graders Elvin Hernandez and Sung Wang told me. Do you like to eat healthy food?
Yeah, I like to eat healthy food.
What do you usually like to eat?
Apples or like fruit.
And no, I don't really eat McDonald's.
Hernandez and Wang were at a miniature farmer's market that sprang up in downtown LA today with their English class from the Miguel Contreras Learning Complex. The market was called Harvest Fest, and it was hosted by LAUSD as part of the district's push to encourage healthier eating among its students. LAUSD is the second largest school district in the country, and it provides meals to more than 500,000 students per day. Many of those students come from low-income families. Nearly 3 out of every 4 LAUSD students qualifies for free or reduced-priced meals. Dennis Stecky of LAUSD says a lot of students' families depend on this.
And I've seen it firsthand, it's access. If you look in some of our more impacted areas, you don't have as many fresh produce options as you do in some of our more affluent areas.
Stecky says schools are community hubs and the perfect place to encourage healthy eating. In 2011, the district gained national recognition when it banned sweet drinks like chocolate milk and rolled out healthy new lunch options like quinoa and pad thai. The only problem? The kids hated it. Reports of uneaten fresh food filling garbage cans and black market potato chips started springing up. But LAUSD's Charlotte Sewell understands where the kids are coming from.
Even from my own experience growing up, I didn't know about the options. I ate what my family provided to me.
Some studies show kids start forming eating habits even before their second birthday. So Sewell says it's important for LAUSD to keep pursuing its goal. For now, LAUSD has at least one student who's open to breaking unhealthy habits.
I guess I'll try everything. You never know unless you try.
So maybe a few years into LAUSD's healthy food push, more students will start to come around. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
America's organic food industry is booming, and California is leading the trend. The state has the most organic farms in the nation with over 2,000. Thanks to Americans' increasing desire for organic products, California farmers are reaping the benefits, and the state's agriculture program is booming while the conventional food industry is growing slowly. Brianna Sachs reports.
Green leaves, tomatoes, onions.
Sandra Hernandez fingers bushels of damp kale at the Larchmont Farmers Market, where she has been shopping for the past 10 years.
I'm coming every weekend, and I like the fresh produce because it is organic, and I believe it's better for your health.
But recently, Hernandez says the small market has doubled in size. It's a phenomenon that's taking place all across California. The state's sales of organic products have grown more than 50% in just 3 years. Farms like Underwood Organic Farms in Moore Park are growing at an impressive rate. Chris Lawson helps run Underwood's farm stand.
We, over the past 2 years, have been about a good 60% increase because we're starting to become a really large, well-known farm.
Underwood is one of about 3,000 organic farms in California who have found growing organic fruits, vegetables, and nuts are more profitable than conventionally grown crops. California farms produce 40% of organic business nationwide. So, more large conventional farms are now transitioning away from pesticides, growth hormones, and antibiotics to earn that organic label. This influx of enormous farms could cause a problem for smaller organic farms, says Andrew Gibson, a distribution manager at an organic farm in Santa Barbara.
A lot of the places down in Ventura County, Oxnard County, and south of them who have thousands of acres have started to shift about 25 to 40% of their farms to organics recently, and that's driving the prices down.
But Dave Kranz from the California Farms Bureau says as long as the demand is there, which it is, small and medium farmers shouldn't worry about prices dropping. He says consumers are only going to want more organic products.
It's certainly true that you've seen farms of all different sizes get involved in the organic business. There are a lot of people who grow organic side by side with conventional or even biotech crops. There are a number of different ways where people connect with their food, whether it's a farmer's market at the small grocery store, a large-scale grocery store, Costco or Sam's Club, a warehouse type of store, restaurants of all different types and sizes. So,
even more importantly, Cran says, California is leading the trend in farmers markets because dedicated customers like Sandra Hernandez are multiplying.
It is busier than before. At the beginning, it was just a little people. Maybe they was not so popular, but now it is.
Americans' increasing demand for organic food is giving organic farms of all sizes a share of the market, but keeping California farmers at the head of the table. Brianna Sachs, Annenberg Radio News.
The NAACP's California State Chapter is holding its conference this week. Today, there was a health program to train black church leaders about HIV prevention and screening. Stephanie Monti has more.
If I have HIV, do I automatically have AIDS?
No.
If I have AIDS, do I automatically have HIV?
Yes.
That's one of the moderators at the gathering that drew about 35 people. They came to discuss ways to reach the part of the population most affected by HIV. For decades, the human immunodeficiency virus has become the most prevalent sexual disease within the black community, comprising about half of all people infected in the U.S. The NAACP held a forum today as part of their 26th annual California-Hawaii State Conference. The core of the NAACP's mission and vision is the fight for equal rights. The conference held in Manhattan Beach opened with a session on health equity, the Black Church, and HIV. The speakers reached out to a broad spectrum of people dealing with HIV, including black pastors.
We've been in this losing streak for a long time, and so preservation has become more important for us than to find ways of updating and upgrading ourselves, repackage the good news of Jesus Christ so it can be real and relevant to those who are the voices, from tomorrow present with us today.
Tori Bailey from Inglewood has years of experience working in the healthcare field and with HIV patients in the 90s. She says despite the fact that there is more data and treatment available, she worries people aren't practicing safe sex.
Things could have been different. And everybody was thinking, oh, this is a gay white male disease at the time. And I said, no, that's not true. I said, this could be anyone.
There are 1.1 million people currently living with HIV/AIDS in the United States, 510,000 of which are Black, according to the NAACP. Leaders at the meeting say the way to lower the incidence of AIDS is to raise awareness about the disease and safe sex. Stephanie Monti, Annenberg Radio News.
The city of Los Angeles recently launched a new website that displays all of the city's financial information. Earlier today, I spoke with LA City Controller Ron Galperin about the new website.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. And the new site that we have now made available is controllerdata.lacity.org. And what it is an open data website that reveals the details of much of the city's revenues, spending, payroll, our audits, about 100,000 different vendor payments for the things that the city contracts for. And what it does is provide for the public the first time a centralized, direct access to a wealth of financial and other information, which you can search, you can analyze, you can visualize, you can download, you can tweet it, you can Facebook it, all of the above.
Now, what was the city's motivation in making these records public?
Well, I actually took office a little more than 3 months ago, having been elected as the new LA City Controller, and I can tell you that as a citizen of Los Angeles, I have long wanted to be able to see this information easily available, and I know a lot of other people want to see it. It's also a great tool within City Hall. It was a top priority for me, and we managed to get it done pretty quickly.
So it seems that the main result of this is that a lot of the city's financial records are now becoming more transparent to anybody who would like to find out more information. Is there anything that has not been included in this that, for whatever reason, has not been made available?
Well, this is going to be an ongoing process because we put on a lot of data sets, but there are others that are going to be coming in the next couple of months. What we do have is what we call the Checkbook LA that enables you to search sort of a virtual checkbook of sorts. There's the data catalog that has information on all those payments to vendors and also the payroll for about 50,000 people. The developer tools for those who are really technically inclined and want to find new ways to look at that information. But there's going to be more and more that is added to it over the course of the next few months. And also we're looking for input from a lot of those data developers and techies who are going to find interesting ways to take that data and compare it within itself and to other places.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been here with Ron Galperin, LA City Controller. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
When the StoryCorps Silver Airbus trailer rolls into town, you can expect a little piece of history to be recorded and kept forever. Denise Guerra takes us inside the mobile storytelling booth right outside the California African American Museum.
Just south of downtown Los Angeles, tucked behind a field of roses lining Exposition Park, sits the StoryCorps trailer. I went to visit the mobile booth, that from the outside looks like a shiny silver blimp on wheels. But inside, the booth captures intimate stories like this.
Did I turn out to be the son you wanted when I was born? Like, did I meet your expectations? And
you've exceeded my expectations, sweetie. Because, you know, sure, you have these fantasies of what your child's going to be like, but you have made me grow so much as a parent.
I met Dina Semsky, manager of the StoryCorps mobile tour.
It's our soundproof recording studio in the back of the Airstream. If you want, I can close the door so you can see how quiet it becomes when we do close the door. We take this booth all over the country, recording the stories of everyday Americans.
For 10 years, StoryCorps has recorded simple conversations between two people or a person who wishes to memorialize someone they love.
We do have a list of what we call our great questions, but there are no rules at StoryCorps. You can do an interview. You can have a great conversation together. It tends to spring very organically.
The conversation is archived at the Library of Congress and can possibly be heard on NPR's Morning Edition. The StoryCorps mobile booth will be in LA until the end of October, where it will then travel up to its last stop in Santa Barbara. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
If you'd like information on how to participate with StoryCorps, visit annenbergradio.org. Neo Soul was the in sound from far out in the mid-90s when Usher and D'Angelo started burning up the charts. The genre and its passionate subculture are now getting proper analysis courtesy of PhD candidate Marcus Shepherd. Arts and culture reporter Jillian Baker has the interview.
I'm here with Marcus Shepherd, a third-year PhD student at the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. So your focus is on neo-soul, yes?
That's correct.
So I love neo-soul. There's some confusion happening with neo-soul, and people are confused about the definition of neo-soul.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what my whole research kind of surrounds, is attempting to define this music genre that's been out for about 20-plus years now. I came into academia because when I was an undergrad, I was looking for books that talked about the music that I loved. Mm-hmm. And I never found a book that talked about neo-soul. And I've loved this genre since I was a teenager. And so mm-hmm. I was like, well, who's writing about it? Nobody was. So I was like, why don't I give it a shot? It was definitely a marketing label term, but there's definitely a culture that I can't guess we are both fans of
right.
that is formed around it. So I think it's important for us to get a concrete kind of definition so that we can kind of engage in a conversation about what Neo Soul is and what it has done and what continues to do.
The term neo-soul. Mm-hmm. I know a few artists in the genre, like Jill Scott, like protest that term. Mm-hmm. And so how does she do that in like her music?
So Jill Scott is just like, I make music. There's a moment where she goes into an operatic aria in the middle of He Loves Me. For me, I theorize that neo-soul is a space where she can do all of these things. People who kind of rap and sing. You kind of have people like Janelle Monáe, who people mm-hmm. consider a modern-day neo-soul artist, who definitely crosses those bounds. So they kind of use these elements in it, and I think it's also a female response to hip-hop. If you look at hip-hop, the majority of releases are by men, and you look at neo-soul, the majority of releases are by women, and they're entering into politics that are definitely talked about in hip-hop. It's important to have women responding to hip-hop because they have been shut out of that genre for so long. A lot of the spaces where hip-hop was originally created were definitely male, masculine spaces that mm-hmm. women weren't allowed to enter. And so neo-soul kind of came about in the mid 90s, and these women kind of gravitated towards the genre because it still had hip-hop elements in it that they grew up and loved, but then it also allowed them to have a space to kind of engage in the politics that were being discussed and that they were listening to. People keep asking about this glow I seem to have, because I'm just not the same. Jill Scott has a great song called My Petition. Talks about kind of the degradation of the black community in response to the Reagan era, mm-hmm. but she performed it at a moment after Katrina, and it resonated with people. And oh, how do I trust you? How do I love you when you lie to me repeatedly? She performed it live on BET. During that moment after Kanye West says George Bush hates black people. And I think that there's a cathartic aspect to neo-soul for the black community especially that I don't think we fully recognize.
Jillian Baker, Annenberg Radio News. Can you see?
Now we're going to check in with Jeremy Chen to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. How you doing, Jeremy?
Thank you, Ryan. Well, coming up at ATVN at 6, our top story, the kidnapped American sailors in Nigeria who are being held hostage. We'll have the latest developments on that. We'll also take a look at how veterans are coping with employment after their service in the military and how they can stand out in this tough economy. And lastly, Starbucks is expanding to tea. They just opened a new tea-only bar in New York. We'll have the latest on that and more on ATVN at 6.
All right, that's it for this Thursday. We've had help today from Allison Brett, Matthew Tinoco, Ashley Wong. The great Victor Figueroa was on the boards. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is the one and only Jerome Campbell. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ryan Bouzion. Stay classy, LA.